One incident involving Commander Cooley, I remember, we were short on fuel at McMurdo, and I had a South Pole flight, and I couldn't take enough gas for me to go to the South Pole and back to McMurdo. I would have to land at the Beardmore camp and refuel there, and then go to Little America, refuel there, and then come to McMurdo, a long roundabout route. And when I was at en route to Little America, Coley was flying Admiral Dufet from McMurdo to Bird Station in the P2V, two turning and two burning, both jet engines going, consuming fuel, and to set a record for that distance. Consuming fuel that, gee, I could have gone twice to the South Pole on. And I just thought it was, I don't know, just a stupid gesture, accomplished nothing except to burn fuel that we badly needed.
How did you fuel aircraft at McMurdo? Did you have fuel tanks?
They were drugged by a small Caterpillar tractor and refueled.
I see. Did they have them, did they take them out of main tanks up in the town?
Yeah.
So they built those big tanks then?
Mm-hmm. Well, about that time, where we really got the fuel was out of that AOG, a small tanker that was self-propelled but was really drugged by one of the ships from the United States down to McMurdo, and it was moored right on the shoreline, right by Hut Point. It was probably still there. And that's where we got a lot of the gas from, for our aircraft.
I see.
And then we built those big tanks up on the hill above McMurdo.
Did you know that the AOG eventually blew away? They lost it somewhere?
Sank. No, I didn't know that.
Eventually it did. Yeah. It didn't happen in your time.
No.
No. So it was there for several years.
Well, at least during Deep Freeze 3, from 1 through 3, it was there.
Are you in touch with any of your old shipmates from that era?
Regretfully, too many of them have died. Jack Torbert, Charlie Otte, Dutch Gardner, he's the one that killed himself in the Otter over there in Dry Valley across from McMurdo. Why? I never could understand that. He made a landing there and then started turning right to go to the bay ice. He turned left into the incline of the mountain there and smacked right into the mountain. Never could understand that. Except that when I was without my airplane at Little America, I went flying with him once. And we went exploring the area and went to on the ice shelf and took a look at the seals, hundreds and hundreds of seals down there. And he was only 10 foot above the snow, and there's a whiteout there. And I was very uneasy about his flying. That was very dangerous. And sure enough, he got clobbered. I went to his funeral, too, up in Alameda.
I see. He got clobbered after Deep Freeze 3?
After Deep Freeze 3, as I remember correctly, yes.
In the field, did you work directly with any of the science parties that were traversing, supplying them with services in the field for other than scouting trail?
No, I didn't work with them at all. Just resupplied them. That was all. And on the ground alongside the tractor trains, long enough to transfer whatever we had to transfer, and then get the Dickens out.
Okay. Did you explore any areas? Did you discover any mountains or anything like that as you were flying about that hadn't been charted before?
Not that I know of.
I'm just covering cat and dog things. You got a geographic feature named for you?
No.
You didn't?
No. Maybe you could arrange it.
I just might. Did you? I mentioned a Paul Seipel and Dr. Gould. Did you know any of the other scientists that wintered over at Little America?
I probably did, but I don't recollect offhand.
Dr. Gray.
Yeah. There was one real nice reporter for the New York Times, very well known. He wrote a book.
Walter Sullivan?
Yes, Walter Sullivan. Yeah. He was a quiet type, but very hard-working. Good gosh, he worked writing his books down there and articles for the New York Times.
He died a few years ago.
Yes, so I understand.
He was, Larry Gould had just died, and he was helping write his obit with me, and he got pancreatic cancer.
Oh, goodness.
And was in the hospital, and I wrote it. And he asked if he could proofread it from his hospital bed, and he did, and he died.
Hmm.
So Gould was a very good friend of his.
Gee, there was another scientist that we got to know pretty dadgum well out of Little America. He became president of Stanford or UCLA, and
Jim Zumberg.
Pardon me.
Zumberg.
Zumberg. Yeah. What's his first name now?
Jim.
Zuni. We call him Zuni. Yeah. Zumberg.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Dr. Byrd. Yeah, he had a station on Ross Island, Roosevelt Island, out of Little America, and down in the crevasses. And so, when I was without an airplane, one of the helicopters had to go over to resupply him, so I rode along his co-pilot in the helicopter, and I got the biggest kick going down into those crevasses, rappelling down by a rope down to the bottom where he was doing research work there. Hang of a nice guy. Yes.
Did you meet Dr. Rutherford there? Bob Rutherford? Little American?
I don't recollect the name. I probably could have, but I don't recollect the name.
Well, I can't think of anything else that I should ask you. Tell me about the people in New Zealand.
People in New Zealand are the world's greatest by far. And New Zealand is such a beautiful place, both North and the South Island. And I met so many friends there that sort of kind of adopted us Yanks. You couldn't do anything without them helping out or wanting to entertain you or feed you or buy you a drink or whatever it was. I think I told you maybe no, I guess maybe I didn't. When we went down to Tyree, first time, and Deep Freeze won to investigate the airport there, at lunchtime, Hugh Skilling, I can even remember his name, who was the operator of the Otago Air Flying Club on the other side of the field, called up and says, I'm going to give you Yanks a show. And so he got into his biplane Gypsy Moth airplane and performed aerobatics, terrific aerobatics. And then he landed, taxied over to our side, and he asked for me by name. I don't know how he got my name. And I says, here I am. He says, you want to go for a flight? I says, sure, jump in. And I did, and we went up and did some more aerobatics. He's quite a pilot. And then a couple of days later, he calls up and he says, I've got to go down to Queenstown. Do you want to go down? I says, sure. And so we went. And and landed at the airport at Queenstown. And he called somebody up who came over in a Citroen, the first time I've ever ridden in a Citroen, who took us up into the hills where he had a cherry orchard there. And I just love cherries. So he said, help yourself, help yourself. And I did, and when we got ready to depart back to Tyre, he brought over 2-3 crates of cherries for the mess hall there. And then another time, Hugh Skilling asked if I wanted to go down to Invercargill. He said, sure. And we went down there. He says, I got to see the mayor, your worship. And the reason for the flight was to take a building contractor who had a proposal, a bid for construction work down there at Invercargill to turn it into the mayor. And it had to be in by 2:00. Well, we got into the mayor's office at 2:15, and the mayor invited us in, and he says, you're going down to Antarctica, huh? And he started asking me all sorts of questions about it. And 2:30 comes around, coming up on 3:00, and here's a poor contractor. He had to get that bid in by 2:00. And finally, the mayor turns to the contractor and says, don't worry about that bid. He says, you got it here before 2:00. He says, it's all right. And then when we got ready to leave back for Tyre, what should be meeting us at the airplane but 2-3 crates of lobsters, crayfish, for the mess up there. So we had lobster that night for dinner. I mean, they're just such wonderful people there.
Well, they still are. Tell me, that makes me think, were you there when they built Scott Base, the New Zealand base?
Scott Base?
Next to McMurdo.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you meet Ed Hillary?
He wasn't there when I was
there. No. Tell me how they got the base there. How did the New Zealanders get the base there?
Doggone if I know. Mm-hmm. But I did go there in Deep Freeze 3. I visited there one evening, and they were very hospitable people there. It was just an easy walk over the hill to Scott Bays.
Did we have any exchange officers with us in any of the deep freezes with any other nations?
I know at Cape Hallett, the Kiwis were there with us.
Yeah. Bob Thompson?
I can't quite remember. That was an interesting base, incidentally. An interesting story about that. I flew there Deep Freeze 3 in the DC in the R-48, and en route there it was instrument weather, and my radioman had the radar on, and he says, we've got land out ahead, but it's real low. And just then the clouds opened up, and there was a huge mountain right in front of us that we were bore sighting, and so we're not in the run. And we landed at Cape Hallett. The runway that they had there, marked with oil drums both sides, was at least 300 feet wide and at least 8,000 feet long on glare ice. Just great. But that basin of ice was at least 8 miles in any direction.
Is it sea ice or...?
Sea ice. Well, yeah, I think it was sea ice. And you could land any which way you wanted to, but we were the first plane ever to land there, and we went into camp, and the radio operator asked me to come into the radio shack. He says, the C-124 coming back from the pole has just made 2 GCAs at McMurdo, and he can't get in. And I says, let's tell him to come here. So I got on the phone and called McMurdo. I said, gee, the weather here is great. Send the C-124 here. 8,000-foot runway, wide open, and good visibility, and all that. So they diverted the C-124 to Cape Hallett. And I went outside to go down to my airplane so I could talk the plane coming in, you know, when I saw it. And when I got outside, blizzard. just like that. So I turn around and go inside. I said, don't let that C-124 come here. It's awful here. I said, let him at least make a couple more GCAs at McMurdo. And he did. I think he made 3 more GCAs and got in on the third third one. And we spent, oh yeah, sir, gee, I had quite a few passengers on that flight too, also. Very interesting. This person aboard. And it's interesting that...
This is on the flight to Halleck, correct?
Yeah. I had Father Dalkowski on board and a couple of Navy captains. He's an old Antarctic explorer from Australia.
Was it Douglas Mawson?
No. Sir. The interesting thing about that Cape Hallett flight was I kept a couple of men in the airplane to keep the engines running over one at a time. When one got cold, start it by using the power from the good engine that was rotating, and then secure that good engine. And this famous Australian explorer...
Was it Dick Smith?
No. Elderly guy with a beard. He didn't want to come into Cape Hallett station or anything. He wanted to stay right there in the airplane, and he spent the night there, sleeping in a sleeping bag on the airplane. And he just loved Antarctica so much. He wanted to get with it. And the next morning we were ready to take off, but the wind was, as I remember, 40 to 50 knots. And I had to take off downwind, which was nothing, because I had plenty of power and 8 miles of runway in front of me. But there was a mountain and upwind, and I couldn't take off into the wind. I had to turn around. But it was glare ice, and I could not turn around. Using maximum power and full rudder and aileron control, I couldn't turn around. So we got a weasel. Tied a line to our tail wheel to the weasel, and he pulled me around, and now I was facing downwind. But I told him, don't let go, because I'll weathercock again. And And I told him that when my engines are revved full power, then release the line. And so we took off downwind in about 40 to 50 knot tailwind, and we got off okay. But it was an interesting experience. If that weasel wasn't there, I'd still be there.
So you were the first pilot to land at Hallett.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, we made it an abort field for flights coming from Christchurch.
Really?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. We never used it much. A couple times they did.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
But we got some 180 knot headwinds a couple times for the C-130s, and they only had about an hour of fuel when they got there anyway.
How strong is the winds?
180 knots.
Holy smokers. Good gosh.
If you get your past point safe returns, you couldn't feel it, but you get some real flow off that continent, catabatic sense. Okay.
I'm going to make a head run.